Hey gang, welcome back. Episode 31 of Zero Carb Journal. I'm Matt. Nice to see you guys. Thank you so much for following along, for all your support, comments. Loving it. Loving having you guys along for the ride here. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. I can't tell you how much this all means to me. It's been so great. So, hey, morning everybody. Saturday morning, it's early. It's 6:15, 6:20, something like that now. And hi everybody. What a week, huh? Thanks for watching my whole movies. Wanted to share that with you guys. That was such a great event, and I was a week for me. I had a really, really, really wonderful week visiting my family, and everything came together really nicely, and I was happy to be able to share that with you guys. I have really enjoyed playing with my video stuff. That was kind of the first chance to start to play with my new things and trying to edit things, and so yeah, that was a lot of fun. How good is my brother at that steel guitar? Man, he's only been playing that for a couple years, if you can believe that. He has been woodshedding like crazy. I'm so proud of him and impressed. That is such a cool instrument. He's so talented. So yeah, thanks very much you guys for sharing that with me, or coming along for the ride. So yeah, my week, man, you guys, geez, holy cow. I had no idea how much that that whole work thing was putting the kibosh on my deal here. Oh, not really. I'm just so fortunate to have this time off, and I am sure appreciating it after that long pull of work. So yeah, so I went and visited my folks last week. I was there from Wednesday to Sunday. So I was there for the 4th, and it was so nice. You know, I only get there once a year. They come up and visit a couple times during the year, but it's hard for me to get down there. They're only a few hours away, but my car doesn't go that far, and my truck is always on the fritz. And I got it put together, and it's just an old farm truck, so it's not like it's that bad. It's just not suitable for road trips. I just don't have a road trip rig right now. So anyways, it was great to get down there, and I was able to coordinate with my brother and sister, and they both were able to make it down. My sister and her guy, and my brother came down to play his steel guitar and hang out, and God, it was just great, you guys. It was so, I just totally relaxed. You know, I did some firewood chores prior to going down there, and then I just got down there and chilled, and boy, I really needed it, and it was great. So really enjoyed my time there. It was really wonderful to spend time with my family. I'm so fortunate, and they're so supportive. It was really great. So I stayed the course in terms of food when I was down there for the most part. I just ate my burgers. I did bring some beef ribs and smoked those with my dad's awesome smoker. That was really fun. And then I ate a lot of seafood. You know, you guys saw those oysters. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like, you literally, if you spend more than 1 minute finding oysters, you have way too many. I mean, they're just, and then you clear the oysters out of the way. I didn't show you guys the clip of that, but you pick those oysters out of the way, and then there's just steamer clams everywhere underneath them. So yeah, so I ate a few steamer clams. I didn't eat many. I didn't care for them that much plain. You know, I used to eat them with a lot of garlic and lemon and celery, and steam them all up with white wine and all that. And it's not that I miss that. I actually really like what I'm eating, as always, but I did find that the clams were not that appealing to me plain. They were pretty good, but they weren't great. And then oysters. I really enjoyed the oysters. There must have been something in there that my body really wanted, because, man, I could just power them down. And it wasn't a good idea. I ate a lot of them on when I got home on Tuesday, because I brought home so many that needed to be eaten. I ate probably 20. And I got a little lightheaded and a little weirded out, and I did look up the nutritional information on them, and you know, a carb or a gram, excuse me, just waking up here, a cup of oysters has 25 grams of carbs. I didn't know that, and I got a feeling that's why I would feel a little wigged out after I ate a whole bunch of them. So, but I sure enjoyed them. My body really liked them, and they tasted great, and that was really enjoyable to just go grab them and eat them. I like doing it, like barbecuing them. And I ate some fish, and for the most part, it felt great. I had a little bit of loose stool when I was down there. You know, we went out to eat a few times, but I felt really good. And I did weigh myself just to see if I would have any big water gains or water retention, swelling, bloating issues, and I didn't, so really stoked on that. For the most part, I've been staying to my 2 pounds a day, although I did kind of lose track and let myself go off course a little bit, so my weight is sort of just maintaining. I'm pretty much 135, 136. I was 136 this morning, so I'm just about at my goal weight. My clothes all fit good. I'm not gonna ramp my eating back up, but I'm gonna let go on the tracking a little bit, I think, in the next couple weeks. And I might keep heading down a little bit through the rest of this month, but I'm pretty much where I want to be. And what I don't want to do is just bounce right back up again. So keep my eye on that. So I got home Sunday, and I've had an unbelievable week, you guys. It has just been so good. That was my first week of vacation last week, really, and I went and kind of took care of what I needed to take care of, going and visiting my folks, and got out of here and put my firewood down and just got away from my chores, and it felt really good. And then I got back here, and I did get back to work a little bit, not paying work, but I got well, I did do some paying work. I got back to my firewood and started picking away at that, and I got back to my stove work. I have a custom design on my desk that's for a customer who's hired me to do that, so I've been working at other paying work, my stove work, which is what I really would like to focus on anyways. So that's been really nice to get back to. And then, this week it's just been summer, you guys. It's been hot. And guess what happened? The surf came up in town here down at the end of my road. And lastly, you guys, I really have been killing it on my goals. So last week, before the 4th of July, I did go surfing and ran into a friend. And he came up, or no, he called me, and I went and hung out with him. I went to his place. I rode my bike over to his place, and we hung out for a few hours. And so I started to do some socializing, and that was the week before I went to my folks. Then I got home this week, and my dear old friend Scotty, who's just one of my closest friends, who I've been meaning to make time to see while I was working, and he's been so great. He's been reaching out to me, and I haven't. When I was so busy there, I had a hard time making time for social stuff. So this week we finally got together, and Scotty, if you're watching, thanks so much for making time to do that. That was awesome. And yeah, friends, I got together with someone who was really important to me, and we went surfing together. And it was so great, you guys. So he just took me down the end of my road. He came pick me up. We were going to go for an hour's drive out to the coast and spend some time. And it turned out there was surf in town, so we just went 2 miles down the end of my road and got down there. So we didn't hang out much in the car, but when we got to the beach, it was like 1995 again. I mean, it was my whole old crew and a lot of people from out of town. For some reason, I saw a dear old friend, a woman who I had a real key role in helping shape her career in this many years ago, in like 92 or 93, when we met in Colorado. And since then, her path has brought her out here. She married one of my dear old friends, and they have 2 wonderful kids. And they were down there, and I hadn't seen either of them for a long time. And their son was out there in the water charging the biggest sets, and that was so cool to see. And a couple other friends from out of town who I hadn't seen for decades. I mean, literally decades. And then, I mean, I must have seen a dozen old faces down there in the surf. It was like my whole old crew was out. Everyone was tripping out. We were all just like, whoa, where's all, this is crazy. All the old crew, all these guys from Mount Baker and Bellingham and the Seattle area and this and Snoqualmie Pass, just all my old snowboard and surf and my van life buddies, all the guys I used to just live on the road with all year round, all over the country. So it was so cool. They're all still charging and incredible people and having wonderful, amazing stories and incredible careers. They're all so talented. So that was awesome. Really encouraging. It felt really good to get back in the mix. I haven't felt like one of them. I haven't felt worthy for a few years. We used to be a really amazing group of awesome people, and I felt like I kind of fell out of that, like I didn't have much to offer. Over the last few years, and all my depression and stuff and isolation, it really, hurt my confidence, and I just didn't feel like part of that crew. So it felt really good to get down there and see everyone and feel good about myself. And have a great surf. I felt good in the water. I felt strong. I got some new surfboards this week, which is cool. I'm sort of reinvesting in that part of my life, recognizing that's something I want to do and I have time to do, and it's free. I can afford to do it. So I traded surfboards. I traded some music gear to Scotty for a really great number one surfboard, and found an old 9 foot longboard for $100 on Craigslist. And yeah, I'm just stoked, you guys. I got my gear and I got time, and I have been taking the time. So yeah, so this week was awesome. And then after that surf session, another friend came up, and he's a fishmonger. He deals fish in the city, sells fish from the tribes out here, and takes them to the city to restaurants. And he brought up some fresh, maybe day old sockeye yesterday or day before, maybe. So I ate a whole lot of salmon. So yeah, I've just had a great week, as you can tell. I'm just kind of going over it. And I've just had a great week socializing. I've had a great week of food. My health has been on point. I've been feeling wonderful. My energy's been really good. I did my workouts early in the week, and then since I knew surf was coming, I just didn't work out on surf days. I saved it. I realized I've been training for my life, and I need to save energy to win at life, right? So on game day, as it were, I didn't work out, and it seems like a great plan. So I'm feeling really good. Didn't feel like I overdid it, and I got a lot of exercise, way too much sun. And I'm stoked. And today is going to be a wonderful day. If the weather holds and the wind doesn't blow, my friend is today going to come pick me up on the boat, and we're going to go spend the week or weekend on his property up there in the San Juans. So I'm living the dream, you guys. I'm feeling pretty fortunate right now, having a great life, a great week, enjoying all these wonderful things around me and wonderful people in this beautiful place where I live. I'm so fortunate to be here and to have this every day. To be well enough to go do these things. So I'm appreciative as always, and feeling great. So I'm going to keep it kind of short again. I know I keep saying I'm going to get back to some more stuff, but I'm going to get ready to go get picked up by a boat here. I do want to touch on a couple more zero carb things. Just talk about, my feeling lately. I've just been feeling better and better and better as always. I've been having a single BM in every morning at the same time, pretty darn firm. As long as I stick to beef and seafood, it seems like I do great. Like I said, I pushed things a little bit weird last week when I was eating out and eating oysters, but nothing lasting, just single events of sort of some loose stools. And so feeling really better than I ever have, you guys. My surf capacity, I just paddled for hours against the current in the water the other day. I felt great. My workouts, I'm getting so close to my front lever. I feel like I've pretty much got it. I need to film it and do an update on that, because my goal is to get that before I turn 50, and it looks like I'm going to get it, which is really exciting. So those things are going great. A lot of you guys have left me comments, and I really appreciate it. I haven't had much time to get back to them. There was one comment that, I'd like to talk about, but I'd like to go more into depth. But one of you asked me to talk about sustainability, and that's a tough one, and it's something we struggle with. And I'll just give you a brief overview of my views and real quick, and maybe go back into it farther at some point. So, eating zero carb is hard for those of us who have, for a long time, prided ourselves on living a sustainable life, a self-sufficient life. I read all of the John Seymour books, and I'm a big Rosedale Press fan, and I've been a permaculture guy, growing my own food for decades now, trying to have as little of an impact as I can. And yeah, zero carb takes a little bit of reconfiguring your brain around what you've been told, and that whole process. And one thing that stands out for me is that, when I started doing livestock years ago, decades ago, I pretty quickly looked at my property and realized that something that I'd been being told wasn't right. I have this forested property with these pastures carved out of the forest, and the pastures are not suitable for growing crops. I mean, you could get out there and you could, I grew a nice garden, and you could eke out a few, but there a few rows of crops, but there's only maybe an acre or two of real good arable land. And I used to grow all my own produce and work really hard at not buying produce from the store. And what I quickly realized that was that from a caloric standpoint, it was easy to grow a lot of food, Lots of variety, lots of flavors to add to my meals. But what I realized was that it was really difficult to grow any food that significantly contributed to my caloric intake. And what I found was that what I could produce a lot of calories of weren't things I necessarily wanted to eat as a staple. Like, it's real easy to produce a whole lot of calories of fruit, right? Tree fruit, apples, pears, plums. You know, it takes a while to establish those trees, but once they're up and running, they're growing thousands and thousands of hundreds of thousands of calories every season without a whole lot of work on the farmer's part. So that's an example of a whole lot of calories that can really offset a caloric, you know, your caloric intake during the day, you know, day to day to day. But the problem is eating that much fructose or eating that much fruit as a major part of your caloric surplus isn't good. I know because I did it for a year when I was eating this specific carbohydrate diet, attempting to alleviate my ulcerative colitis or Crohn's or whatever, and it worked, but along with it came some rising metabolic syndrome where my blood pressure and blood sugars were rising, and my abdominal adiposity was starting to grow, and I was struggling with those issues. And I, you know, that's because I was offsetting so much of my caloric intake with fruit. At least that's what I believe. So, you know, another example of that is potatoes were a great one that I could grow quite a few calories of, and really offset my caloric intake. And but again, well, potatoes, I don't feel like they're quite such a bad staple. But even those, to grow a significant amount of caloric intake and to make it through the season, it was difficult. And here in my climate, it was really hard to keep them through the year. And I dug root storage, root cellars, and you know, I tried numerous year, decades, literally, of storing these things. And I could usually make it to December or so. It's just wet and not that cold here. We don't have a good storage season like you might in the East Coast, where the humidity is lower and the temperatures are colder and more consistent. So at any rate, I struggled with, you know, growing a significant amount of calories, and I overcame that by growing a whole lot of greens, brassicas, cabbages, kales, broccolis, peas, beans, legumes, things like that. And, you know, and I did grow wheat too, and I would process my own wheat. And I'm forgetting all sorts of stuff, I'm sure, because I grew all kinds of things, tomatoes and peppers, and my canning jar or my canning cupboard was full. I would put up like 1,000 pints this season. And what I'm trying to say is that growing a lot of food in terms of calories is so labor intensive, and it was so input intensive on my property. And by inputs, I mean I would tear the soil open every year. I'd remove the surface of the soil and open it up to the wind and the rain. And I would sometimes amend with fertilizers, well, even if it was just the manure out of the barn. And I would dig and dig, and I would water and water, and I would use the tractor, and I would drive to town and get seeds or order seeds, and I would work on it day in and day out. And my point of saying all this is there is nowhere that I know that we grow annual crops. Okay, now that's different than perennial crops. Perennial crops, right, to come up every year, like tree fruit, season after season, once you've done the work. But annual crops, what people think of, you know, crops that we require new seed every year and harvest every season, you know, that people think of when they think of plant-based whole foods diet and offsetting our footprint and all that, all those annual crops, soybeans and all the legumes and all the brassicas and all the things you see in the produce aisle for the most part, you know, those require large inputs of energy, large inputs of fuel. They require tearing open the soil. They require opening up the earth and exposing the dirt to wind and sun and rain. They require amending. They require fuel to tractor, fuel to transport, buying seed, and a lot of water, carrying the water and the nutrients off. You know, I just don't buy it. Okay, now I'm not going to go into the science people talk about. I just had a wonderful conversation with my sister. I need to get her on and sit down and do a conversation with her about this. She's a conservation, has a master's degree in conservation, is a specialist in conservation, and is the lead conservationist at a major zoo with a big staff, and it's what she does all the time. And we have great conversations about this stuff. And you know, she's like, "Well, what about the water use?" I say, "You know, whenever we read about animal livestock operations and sustainability, we're hearing about the worst case scenario. And I know that factory farming does have its pros and cons, and I'm not going to harp on it, but I don't believe, you know, I know that ruminants are meant to eat grass, and I know that there's grass out there for them to eat. I don't believe that we need to be feeding them soy and things like that to raise them more quickly. People say, argue that it offsets their carbon, you know, emissions because they don't fart as much, and we slaughter them sooner so they don't make as much gas, and there's science that shows that shows that's true, but they also aren't helping pasture, which, you know, sequesters carbon back into the soil and offsets the emissions from their farts. And as well, large manure pits are one of the major causes of the greenhouse gas emissions from livestock manure. It's not the cows themselves, it's the way we deal with their manure, and so on and so on. There's so much nuance to this conversation that it could be a two-hour long conversation. But really, the gist of it to me is that when I raise my cows and sheep out on my pasture and on my property, the contrast between what it takes to raise calories with plants is so stark with regards to inputs, with regards to impact on the land, with regards to the things I need to bring into this land, fuel I need to use. You know, the cows and sheep on my property, a woodland that they can browse with some grass and trees and the ability to fences so I can move them from pasture to pasture, in a periodically, so they always have fresh grass, and so they're never really damaging one area too much. My inputs are so low, they're really negligible. I don't water them at all. I don't irrigate them. Yes, they drink some water out of the stream. You know, not out of the stream, but from my spring water, I route it over to cisterns for them. But it's water that just is passing by the property, but they do drink water, but I don't irrigate. So they, you know, the idea of using water, I don't hay them. They are on pasture all winter. I haven't bought hay for years now. So there's no inputs. There's no fuel input at all. I mean, I buy fences, you know, but that's a one-time installation thing if I do it right. Never seems to be, but conceptually it is. But I don't use any fuel. I don't use any feed. I don't amend. I don't water. And so, you know, my opinion is that we do all of it wrong. You know, we raise livestock wrong. We feed them people food. We grow food places that could grow food for us. We try to grow our livestock everywhere that we are. You know, that's just inappropriate. You know, my feeling is, and again, and then going back to the plants, when we grow plants, we use horrible methods. We use huge machines, and we tear open huge tracts of land, and we, you know, send tons of fertilizer down into our waterways, and we remove the topsoil and lose the topsoil, and we use giant tractors and tons of fuel and all kinds of fertilizers and all kinds of chemicals. We use broadleaf plant killers and glyphosate, you know, and all sorts of terrible things that we don't need to do when we raise livestock. So my point is that we do all of it wrong, first and foremost. There's so many humans in the world. We are going to have an impact on this planet. I don't, you know, eating just rice isn't an option for every human in the world. Eating just meat isn't an option for every human in the world. We're going to have varied diets. Not every person is going to eat the same thing. What a world it would be if we all were just forced to eat one thing. So, you know, I don't think any of those arguments really work. You know, people say everyone can't do that, and everyone can't do that. Well, everyone can't do any one thing. In addition to that, you know, I think, like I said, we do all of it wrong. So growing plants, we use super high impact methods rather than sustainable local polycultures and mixed crops using sustainable practices, growing them in the appropriate places. And then I feel the same way about livestock. You know, when they're grown in their appropriate, you know, proper and accustomed lands, they eat grass on grasslands that don't grow crops. They don't need irrigation. The problem comes when we just try and bring them everywhere and grow them in the desert and grow them in the you know, tundra and everywhere else. So we need to match our land to our use better. Of course, there'll be transportation costs. And there's no easy answers, you know. I know that too. But listen, here's what it comes down to. I don't believe there's any truth to the idea that eating ruminants has to be less sustainable than eating plants. And I actually believe it's the other way around. I think the ruminants can restore carbon, can restore our savannas and prairies, and can be used to sequester carbon into our landscape and to turn things around. You know, there used to be millions and millions of buffalo across the middle of this country. People say, we can't do that. There's no room anymore. BS. We don't even use most of that land that the buffalo were on. You know, I don't know how many of you have driven across this country, especially in the northern areas, but there's a whole lot of wilderness and land and pasture and prairie and savanna out there still, that would support animals. So, you know, there's 40 million plus deer running around in the woods out here that we don't even deal with. They're just eating everything else, you know, and there's all those lawns. In every city, at every college, in every place across this country, there is acres and acres and acres and acres and acres of lawns that we fertilize and use broadleaf killer on, and we, you know, same bad things. We use all these supplements and amendments. We wreck the soil, we wreck the water, and for what? We grow this great grass. I mean, it's almost like we're growing ourselves all this soy and potatoes in our front yards and just throwing it away. We are growing food in our front yards and we throw it away. We mow, we pay to have someone come, we buy fuel to mow that grass a couple times a month, every all summer, and then we throw it away. And that could just, you know, there's probably enough grass on all the lawns in America to feed livestock for half the country. You know, I'm just making that up. And I realize there's a lot of difficulties in getting from A to B there, from getting the grass into the cows' mouths. But my point is it's BS. There's land, there's arable land that can grow grass. I mean, it's our front yards. There's arable lands all over the place that can grow grass, you know, and then we can get back to growing really good food on the real arable land instead of soybeans for chickens or whatever it is we're doing with it down there in Brazil. So I get pretty fired up about this topic, and I could go on and on and on. But you know, my take on sustainability is you really have to take the whole picture. You have to look at it with an open mind, and you kind of have to forget all the things that we're told. And you can't just, again, just take science as science. And you know, my lovely sister, she is a well-educated conservationist. And what's nice about talking to her about it is she will equally throw out the studies on both sides. You know, I tend to throw out all the ones I want to, all the plant-based ones. But you know, she does a great job of balancing me because she does show me that there are problems and that it is. I mean, we have too many people. It's going to be hard to grow them enough food no matter what we do. And cows take a lot of room. You know, I'm here with acres of land and a few cows and more food than I need. But you know, not everyone has acres of land, so I get it. It's problems. But the nice thing is she also looks at those studies on plant-based being more sustainable. You know, what about rice? We know that rice agriculture worldwide puts out on the order of twice or more of the carbon emissions than livestock, simply due to the nature of wet grounds producing gas, you know, greenhouse gases as they rot. And so there's a lot of the story we just don't get. And so it's wonderful to talk to my sister, who's a lifelong vegetarian. And a, you know, conservationist who agrees with those things, who looks at that and says, yeah, you know, they're growing, you know, soy and all these things, and most of that soy goes to paint, and then some of it goes to livestock, and we get the wrong numbers, and the livestock is mostly pigs and chickens, not ruminants, and on and on and on. So there's holes in all of it, and I'll tell you what, when I hear people argue vehemently on one side or the other, my feeling is those are people who've never spent any time actually raising livestock or around livestock or even growing plants or growing their own vegetables on a farm or even a big garden, because all you have to do is have one big garden and you know pretty quickly that something isn't right with the stories we're being told, because there's a whole lot of work and there's a whole lot of inputs, and tearing open that dirt every year is not sustainable. You know, you just have to do it yourself on your own piece of land for a few years, and you quickly realize that your soil is losing nutrients and you're losing topsoil and you're tearing it open. And yeah, it becomes pretty obvious when you actually get your hands dirty and try and work your own piece of dirt. It becomes pretty obvious what's good for that piece of dirt and what's not. So Don't hate on me, you guys. I know I'm not the most scientific based guy, but that's how I feel about that stuff. So, anyways, I guess you got me ranting and I went on for a while. So, I better get going. I got to get to town, run some errands, and get ready to catch this boat. Hopefully, my buddy's going to call soon and we're going to be off to on a boat ride. So, can't wait to get back to you guys next week and get you updated. And I hope you guys are feeling as good as I am. Thank you so much, as always, for all your support and kind comments. And congrats to all those of you guys who have have made the plunge and dived in and are starting Zero Carb. I love reading that you're all just starting. So let me know how I can help you. And I'll come back and comment on your comments, hopefully, in the coming week when I return. And hopefully, next week, I'll have some time to chill and spend with you guys. So, all righty, you guys. Thanks so much for watching. Hope you have a wonderful day. And I will see you really soon. Thanks. See you.